about the play? Is there anything else we need to address?
Otherwise, we called these three people in here. Yeah. That's why I think they're here.
Okay. We have with us, left to right, on
I'm sure that helps
across
the listeners.
Your radio dial. from low to high. We have Scott Gossett, who plays Mycroft Holmes, Eric Bond, who plays Sherlock Holmes, the title character, and Corey Rapace, who plays Dr. Watson. James Watson, right? John Watson? Uh-oh. Dr. Watson. He's Doc. I'm just flexing my knowledge of Sherlock a little bit. And the play is just called Sherlock. It is at the Panetta Theater this weekend, next Saturday. And it is an original production, is it not?
By Teresa Pesci. Yes, okay. Absolutely. Local playwright.
And I guess, gentlemen, did you... Let's start with your diving into the roles. Did you guys try out... Did you know going in that you were auditioning for these particular parts? Or did you go in, each of you, hoping to be Sherlock and Eric won the day?
Well, before we begin the pleasantries and all this fanfare, the tea has not been served yet. I'm not feeling very well this morning. We got off the ship last night, and I'm not at my peak. So please call your servant in to have the tea. That'd be grand.
Sherlock, the boat, the ship came in, and this is landlocked.
Yes.
Well, no, we're not landlocked. Maybe he came up the Columbia and then the Clark Fork.
Sure.
It's been a journey of old journeys.
It's been a
gentlemen.
Long journey. Tea will be coming up at 9 o'clock. That's usually tea time in the morning here in Sandpoint.
Well, fine.
Okay. Are you going to be ready to go on tomorrow night? That is the question.
Yes. About the question you previously said, this Eric Bond chap. Yes, he quite the distinguished actor I've heard. I've seen him perform before. He's, as a plebeian, he does well.
Shows promise?
I wouldn't say promise. That's probably stretching it a bit. But
he
can demand the stage, whether it be good or bad, you know, talking from his mouth or his bottom side. I don't know which one is usually occurring, so.
Now, Mr. Holmes, Mr. Bond has been doing just fine.
Say what you will. I believe you, Watson. You are my right-hand man.
So, Sherlock, there's been many short stories and plays about you. What kind of Sherlock are we going to see this weekend at the Panda and then the following Saturday? What kind of Sherlock will appear?
You're going to see Sherlock at his lowest and his highest, I would say. He's a broad range, a spectrum, if you will. A peacock flouting around his willy-nilly artistic and very poignant deductioning personality. He will be all over the place. Be prepared for everything you can imagine. He's not a very, what I would say, friendly fellow. So be prepared to be kind of shocked, if you will.
Well, we can ask Watson about that.
I would ask my brother, actually. He would know best.
Okay.
Well, Sherlock, you are definitely a peacock. Pruning.
What does that make the brother? Ooh.
Well, I am much more superior to my brother.
Just remove the P, and then you'll have the answer there.
Okay, the P. Ecock? Okay, got it. Okay, and Watson, how do you fit in with all of this? With these two brothers flashing their feathers and their fans and whatever.
These two, they don't really do emotions very well, so I bring the human aspect to the group.
Okay, and what kind of human aspect will you be bringing to the Panetta stage?
The physician type.
Ooh,
I am a doctor.
That is true. So your skill set will be used there.
Sort of.
Okay.
Whenever I can.
Can you talk about the play unfolding? Is it going to be dark, corpses, coffins, all sorts of things like that? Or is it going to be Barbie?
Well, there certainly is some coffin talk.
Okay.
I see what you did there, Watson. Well done.
Thank you. I was quite proud of myself.
A murder? Is there a murder?
A murder most foul.
There's always a murder when I'm involved. Jim and Jack, you should know this. Speaking of, is that a children's novel? I believe I've heard that before. Jim and Jack. Or Jack and Jim.
Yeah, we went up the hill.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
It's a retelling of the traditional myth, the fairy tale. How many people in the play?
I do know this. It is 12 people.
Okay, 12 people. And is there an intermission?
There is.
What does Sherlock Holmes do during the intermission?
Sherlock goes into his, what we call, happy place. Usually in his mind, deep, deep, deep within that cerebral chamber of his.
He often needs rescuing from it.
Okay. Let's step out of our characters for a second and, okay, Watson just took a deep breath and rolled his eyes and his head in a clockwise counterposition. What is it like to play these roles? What is it like to, obviously, this is a character whom a lot of people know. You say the name Sherlock. What is the baggage that you bring to these roles that make this challenging?
Well, I just have to say, this is the first time Eric has broken character in months.
Oh, okay. Well,
true.
Okay. We have super glue. Mm-hmm. We can put them back together after this program.
I'm not like Humpty Dumpty. Come on.
Okay. So what is it like playing these characters? What are the challenges?
Oh, it hasn't been challenging for me at all.
Okay.
I just am Dr. Watson.
Okay. Are you a Sherlock Holmes fan, a Sir Arthur Conan Doyle fan, having read, or where's your, is it from the Robert Downey Jr. films, that sort of thing? I forget the character. Who played Doc Watson in those?
Jude Law.
Jude Law. Jude Law.
Got it. I got that one.
Welcome back, Jack.
Jack here.
Yes. I was just browsing the internet here.
Oh, that is so unfair.
I have the rest of the cast when that is necessary, if we want to list off the other performers too. But I'll hold on to that for now because I don't want to interrupt. We were saying, you were saying it was very easy for you, Corey, to get into the character of Dr. Watson. Is that because you are like, you're long familiar with the stories, or you just found it naturally fit your...
So, funny story, I've actually never read any Sherlock Holmes books.
Oh, except come on.
For one that was basically a fan fiction where Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson take on the Cthulhu mythos from H.P. Lovecraft. Okay. That's the only one I've ever read. Otherwise, it's just been, Robert Downey Jr. and
Jude Law.
Yeah.
So that's the only familiarity I have with it.
Huh. Okay. Well, then, so you kind of didn't have to, or you were able to make it your own without the weight, the baggage of...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I didn't have the weight of the world watching me.
Yeah. How about the other, or let's start with Scott. How about you?
I've been a Sherlock Holmes fan for decades. I've read the entirety of Doyle's canon of work several times.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
And I really love what Teresa's done with the character of Mycroft. In the original stories, you know, he doesn't get a huge amount of character development, and I really enjoy any, you know, whether it's a play, whether it's a story, or a show that delves more into Mycroft's character. You know, the Sherlock series on BBC really does that a lot better than, you know, previous adaptations do, and that's kind of where I've drawn a lot of inspiration for this role from.
The modern one?
Yeah, the one with set Benedict in present Cumberbatch.
Day. And, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. It's kind of, he's kind of a, he's just a tossed off character sort of in the stories.
Yeah, he's really more of a plot device. A lot of times, you know, Doyle often describes him as occupying the broom closet of the British government.
Yeah. Interesting. How does it make you feel when someone like Corey playing Dr. Watson says he's never read a Sherlock Holmes story?
I mean, to me, it's just, it's very surprising. I mean, and I'm a little bit older than Corey, and I mean, you know, I grew up with just cartoons that were adaptations of Doyle's work, so I was always exposed to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, as soon as I could read at that level, I was delving into the books. I've got two volumes that are the complete stories, and they are falling apart. I've read them so many times.
Huh. Yeah, they're pretty, I haven't read them in a while, but they're wonderful stories.
Yeah.
Eric, how about you? How did you take to the character, and what's your experience with Sherlock Holmes?
The moment I was approached that I need to be Sherlock, I immediately watched The Great Mouse Detective over and over and over again, and I think I've nailed it from that perspective. Actually, no, I've seen, you know, the first time I'd ever known and, like, really embraced Sherlock Holmes was the Robert Downey Jr. movies. It was fascinating because I knew nothing about Sherlock Holmes at that point. I was, I think, in college, I believe. And it was fun. I was like, this is a fun character. I didn't know he was so quirky. Is that a part of the canon? Is this just like they're doing some really crazy artistic license here? I had no idea. And so that's the one I really, like, you know, focused on back in the day. Like, that's who Sherlock Holmes is. Then you watch an old version and you read some of the stories and you're like, no, this is really specifically tailored around who he was back in when Doyle wrote him. And then you fast forward to Cumberbatch playing Sherlock, which is the modern version, and you kind of get this new spin on it with modern day. And when I was approached again, back to what I said, when I approached, I had no idea what to lean onto. I had no idea. And so I did the liberty of just remembering who Sherlock is and using my own version of what I believe a someone with his neuroses would do to give him his own personal flavor. He's not one. He's not the other. He's what you'll see is a mix of what I know in my head and what in my soul, who Sherlock should be. So he's kind of, like I said, a broad spectrum earlier. And I made a point not to watch any Sherlock in the past 6 months to make sure I didn't have any leaning towards one character or the other.
Went cold turkey, huh?
That's right, yeah. It's been fun, though.
I think I predate everyone with my Sherlock Holmes, Basil Rathbone.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's pre-Robert Downey Jr., pre-Benedict Cumberbatch. That, I want to say, goes back to the 30s, the Hounds of the Baskervilles and things like that. Good stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. I grew up with watching the Jeremy Brett BBC series on PBS over here.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that would be in the 80s?
Probably. Okay. I think they started making them in like the 80s.
1980s, not your...
That's
got it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Not my personal 80s, yes. Yeah, but that was set in the original time frame of the of the stories, in a pretty faithful adaptation, I think, widely agreed to be one of the best. Anyway, that's my experience with the character, and that's who lives in my head as Sherlock Holmes.
So assuming that the audience is going to be coming to the Panada with a degree of familiarity, you know, at one level, all the way from Corey with not having read any, to Scott, who has lived it, and in between is the balance of Eric. What can they expect? I mean, you know, obviously they're coming with...
Yeah, that's a good question. It's a loaded question. Again, we like Corey said, he feels like he embodies the Watson that he's portraying normally, you know. And then Mycroft in the other spectrum, he's had his, you know, whole world knowing what Mycroft is, but he's doing his own flavor of it. And then, but I think the key is the script itself.
Good.
The script itself lends itself to us being able to be a specific version of these characters due to the great script that was written. So people are going to, there's quick dialogue, there's some good humor, some quick humor, but there's also some deep thoughts and instead of, you know, on the screen, Sherlock, you get to hear what's going on in his head, but in the stage version, you have to hear it from Sherlock's mouth, what's going on in his head. And so there's going to be a level of, can I keep up with Sherlock right now? And of course, me not, you know, blubbering lines that too fast to try to portray that wildness in his brain.
Well, the challenge there, it sounds like that with a live audience, you know, if they laugh, if they whatever like that, you have to time yourself. Whereas with a film or on television, you know, if you didn't get it, we do have TiVo. you know, to play it back, yeah. What did Sherlock say again? That sort of, or we can close caption. Yeah, we can't close caption you people.
No closed captioning. So it is. It does rely on us making sure that every word is delivered precisely, so that, you know, if folks who come see the show, like it was talked about yesterday, they're going to hear it one time, and we have to make sure that they hear it correctly, and they get the nuance, the feeling, the emotion, the non-emotion, if you will, of each scene and each moment.
And we do encourage them to come back if they go tomorrow night.
Absolutely.
Come back on Saturday night, and there's a matinee on Sunday, or let it sit for a week.
So maybe you're saying we should really just go as fast as we can. Garble it out.
Garble as much as you can. And then people, what did they say? You know, time out, you know, that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, that's... I hope that some people will be returnees. I mean, that's the whole point of having it over two weekends, which I think is a good thing to do.
Yeah. Tell you what you do. Just cut the power to the building like 15 minutes right before you solve the mystery. Come back next weekend.
There we go. Yeah. Moriarty could do that.
That's right.
There we go.
Good idea.
To a glow stick theater.
Yeah. You are listening to the KRFY Morning Show, and the folks we're talking to are Corey Rapass, Eric Bond, and Scott Gossett, all of them actors in the upcoming play Sherlock at the Panada Theater. We haven't really talked about the story of the play or anything like that, but we could save it for a minute if you want to take a break.
What we could do is take a music break and then come back and talk some more about and, you know, maybe serve Sherlock his tea.
Yes.
And maybe if we could order it someplace. Do we have DoorDash or whatever those things are? On this date, April 17th in 2003, the great, incredible Etta James got a sidewalk plaque on the Hollywood Hall of Fame. And I thought it'd be fun to play one of her signature songs, At Last.
Etta James.
At Last. I think that's a great song. And along with Tell Mama, another one of her big hits. But Etta James got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame on this date in 2003.
2003. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, congratulations to her. 21 years ago.
Well, she passed in 2012, I think. So
yeah.
She enjoyed it for a while.
That's good. When did that song come out? Do you know?
Oh,
top of your head?
Well, it was originally done by one of the big bands in the 40s.
Ah.
And then she, I want to say in the 50s when jazz was in, she initially did she updated it with a little jazz flavor.
Yeah.
And
looks like 1960 was when it actually released on
the tail end of the 50s.
Yeah. She probably recorded it in 59. What do you know?
Hey, who knows?
We're here in the studio. It's Jim and Jack. I'm Jack.
Ta-da.
That's Jim. And we're talking to the cast of Sherlock at the Panada Theater.
At the Panada Theater tomorrow night, the 19th, Saturday, the 20th at 7:30 p.m. I think the doors open an hour before. And then a matinee on Sunday at 2 p.m. And then a week from Friday, the 27th. At 7:30, and tickets you can get at the door or at panada.org.
The unmistakable profile is on the poster.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. Does Sherlock actually wear the deerstalker and smoke the pipe in the play? Yes?
He wouldn't be Sherlock without it.
Okay.
And speaking of At Last, thank you so much for the tea. Finally arrived. This DoorDash, you call it. I saw you hand him a bill. Do you tip him? You plebeians, tipping someone for bringing you something you deserve.
What is going on here? So much part of your lifestyle, you know, that you accept it. But yes, we do tip here in the States.
Mm-hmm. Do you have cream?
No. You're gonna or lemon.
This day did not go as well as I thought it was going to go.
Yeah, this is a third world country in terms of handling tea and
Yes, you said it precisely.
The whole ceremony around it.
But you see, Sherlock, this is the reason that we had to kick them out of the empire.
It all makes sense now.
I know we chose because we were overburdened with the whole ceremony around tea. And we threw it into the bay. Did we not, gang? We threw it into the bay.
Gentlemen, please. Let's
not refight the Revolutionary War.
Let's leave politics at the gate. What year is it? Can somebody clarify that for me? The play takes place in present day, or is it a?
It's more of an era. Let's just say there's no like actual date, but it's in an era, early 1900s, late 1800s ish.
The classic Sherlock Holmes.
Classic Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
With set pieces around that and dialogue that would be maybe even era specific.
Is there? I see that there are women in the cast: Kate McAllister, Miriam Robinson, Ashley Shawbreck, Shelley Johnson. It is not just the three of you.
I hope not.
When we think of the Sherlock era and the women, I feel like all the female characters in those stories are. The word femme fatale, the term femme fatale comes to mind for some of them, or else they're damsels in distress or something like that. But you've stocked the cast with women, which is not necessary. I mean, is that something new that is coming to Sherlock's life? Is there a woman involved personally?
I'll say yes. There is someone that maybe Sherlock, you know, is confounded by.
Mm-hmm.
It is a small part, but it is something. I'll give you that. But yeah, the female roles in the show do fit some of the trope of the time to a perfect level, I would say. Like we said, it is a part comedy. There is the comic relief, and the comic relief comes in some of the characters. I would say every character gets at least one laugh, I would say. And each character has their own dynamic to that comic relief. But then, again, it's also a murder mystery. So you get the both sides. And so you want the... And so the female cast does a great job of supporting the three main characters. Well, I would say four main characters. But
yeah. Mm-hmm. Somebody has to serve the tea, don't they?
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, hello.
Uh-huh.
Well, it wouldn't be Sherlock without Mrs. Hudson.
Oh, that's right. She's the landlady?
She's the landlady.
The landlady. Yeah.
And she has a love-hate relationship with Sherlock and right back at her.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this will be taking place on the Panada stage. So how long have you guys been in rehearsal?
I believe it was end of January.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If I remember correctly.
And is today a dress rehearsal?
Indeed, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Final dress.
Okay. And then after the final dress rehearsal... I'm very ignorant about this, about the pacing. What happens between now and tomorrow night when you take the stage for real?
Well, I'm taking the day off from work. It's a ritual of mine. I get to rest, bathe, shave, and behave.
And have tea. And have tea.
And, of course, naturally.
Have tea. Is there any changing, like, in, you know, where you stand on the stage, anything like that, or... how you deliver lines, or you just go with the time between the dress rehearsal and...
Personally, I will probably be pacing my house all day tomorrow. I do get off tomorrow. I luckily have a day off. We have a company holiday, if you will. So it kind of fortuitously lines up with opening night for me, because I'll be...
And Scott, how are you going to spend tomorrow?
I'm really not sure yet. I'm on call for work in case I need to go in for some reason or another. So I'm probably just hanging around the house, you know, preparing myself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. When do the butterflies exit? When you first take a step out on stage or are they sort of with you, or?
Usually by this time, this is me personally, by this time, right now, I would be losing my mind, butterflies. Mm. But I'm feeling good about this right now. So tomorrow will probably be the moment, the first time I have to look into the audience. There's this very specific way that Sherlock gets introduced to the audience, and it's going to be probably that moment where I'm like,
that, boom. Yeah, so. And how about Watson?
I've been doing theater long enough that I don't get butterflies until I'm right about to go on. And then, as soon as I take that step past the curtain, nothing.
Okay. And then what happens between performances? From Sunday, you have until Saturday, almost a whole week. Do you forget lines, or you've got a life that happens to you.
Well, that's what pickup rehearsal is for.
Ah, okay, like a pickup basketball game.
Exactly.
A pickup rehearsal. Just polishing off, fine-tuning.
Exactly.
Making sure we remember everything. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we play jokes on each other, try to get each other to break.
Do you, in that, 6 days in between, do you get a little bit rusty, or... I imagine when you're with the other actors that, you feed back and forth. But, I just think of, Jack and I were trying to figure out what we did this last weekend.
Yeah.
Before we went on the air, and I'm thinking, lines. Mm-hmm. And, are there any tricks of the trade that you have?
For me, it's just like riding a bicycle. As soon as I get back on that stage,
it
just comes.
Okay.
But I'm probably autistic, so I don't know. It just comes naturally for me.
Me, on the other hand, it's different. I do have to get back into the script. I have two small children, so that my mind gets just erased on a daily basis, usually, I would say. During that week, we do have to pick up rehearsal, and same with Corey a little bit. Like, it takes a while for, when you're burned in these lines, it becomes a part of who you are, and like Scott here, we talked about throughout our day, we're roaming around in a British accent, spouting lines out, having fun with ourselves and our families, and to their dismay sometimes. It's keeping fresh, making sure we're not forgetting everything. So
how long does the after next Saturday, a week hence? Is he still with you on Sunday? And
absolutely.
How long does it? Because what I'm thinking of is, I don't know if you saw last Saturday night SNL, Saturday Night Live. Ryan Gosling was on, and he was trying to get rid of Ken, Barbie, but he can't. And so I'm just wondering, with your characters or with any play that you've been in, after the play has run its course, do you have residue, resonance? They go on for a little while.
Absolutely.
I did The Importance of Being Earnest quite a while ago.
And was a great performance. Great production.
Thank you. Algernon still leaks through to this day. I'll be at work, and then just suddenly I'll say something quite like Algernon, and I'll be a little more sassier than I meant to be. And then I did Murder, and every so often I just fall into the book. I just start doing the accent, and suddenly I am book. And it's one of my multiple personalities. I just can't break it.
Yeah, that's a good point. It becomes part of your personality that you can tune into, or it just appears. You're like, what triggered that?
And I'll piggyback on that. And this even goes an insane amount of time. Teresa wrote a show. My first show I ever did in Sandpoint was this murder mystery called Murder at the Castle. 12, 13, many, many, many years ago.
God, you're old.
Exactly. To this day, I still go into the character, and David comes out in a flourishing way, and we just brandy are all around. Yes, and it still to this day, David lives in my psyche, and I cannot get him out of it. So.
Yeah, I can imagine your kids going, "Mom, Dad's at it again," resonating like that. What fun! What else do we need to know about Sherlock? We're going to repeat the times and whatever.
Well, I want to know the story. What mystery gets Sherlock involved this time? There's always something that
you would like to know, wouldn't you? But you'll have to come to the show. But we'll give you kind of a the themes, if you will.
Yeah.
Mycroft, you want to...
Well, I mean, honestly, the mystery is not much of a mystery at all, but it does take my slower brother a bit to figure it out. But there's much of love involved in this, I will tell you that. It is a rather twisted love story. Everything?
Yeah, well, I think we're okay. Go on. You were saying.
And, of course, you know, my brother and I, we are so cerebral and, you know, above everybody else. That love just doesn't touch us the way it does other people. And so it is rather interesting, our dynamic with that. And
yes, being unencumbered by emotion allows me to be someone a little higher echelon for most. But what he says with the love part, there's also the opposite side, the other wing to the bird, hate. Love and hate together play a role. You can't have one without the other.
Quite right.
One might call it a theme.
Say that again, Watson.
One might call it a theme.
Oh, a theme, yes, yes. And so taking those two themes, and I'm going to break character here, having love and hate, the main theme of the play is how that can transform someone. You know, someone who's here doing this and being their best life, and through love and hate and what that can do to someone and how they can be changed for good or bad.
Well,
yeah,
quite a theme. I guess this would be a question for the author probably, but is the mystery itself something drawn from the books or wholly original?
Do you suppose? Completely original.
Original. Yeah.
I mean, the characters are the same, obviously, but
right,
the,
yeah,
the story itself is completely. Yeah. No one's ever heard the story, and it's a good story.
Cool. The play is Sherlock. It's at the Panetta Theater. Is Dr. Watson going to wear his... Actually, I don't know if in the book he has a mustache. In the books, he has a mustache, or if that's just something that all the actors seem to choose to do.
He probably had a mustache, because that was just the thing back then.
Uh-huh.
But I don't like having just a mustache, so I'm going the full beard.
He does, yes. I think he's noted for at least having whiskers of some kind.
So yes.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense. And, Sherlock, we assume, is going to be clean-shaven, as usual.
Normally. Uh-huh. But, like I said, Sherlock is revealed to the audience in a specific way, having dealt with something.
Mm.
So he may or may not be.
Okay. Is it... Some of the Sherlock... I mean, the Sherlock stories often have him, Sherlock, going off on some tangent about an obscure field of scientific study or something like that. Which I imagine would be very difficult to memorize if you were doing it as an actor. Is there any challenging part like that where you have to, you know, do a monologue about botany or something like that?
I'm trying to put this lightly. Yes.
Yes.
The mind of Sherlock and what he deals with and how he deduces and. Mm-hmm. Tries to reveal to his fellow plebeians what he's going through has to be done very specifically and long-windedly.
Yes.
At some points. So
yeah, yes. Is it? Yeah, that would be a challenge. I'm not much for memorization, I don't think. So that would be, yeah, that'd be tough. Hopefully it works. Hopefully you don't have the same problem that I do with
it. It will. It will.
Yeah.
In the beauty of it. When you're on that stage and you flub the line and you know where you're supposed to go, you're driving in the direction, the GPS is telling you to get here. As long as you're into the side streets, you'll get there eventually.
Right, yeah.
That's kind of how I allude to it.
Yeah. Do we have any other important questions or
well,
things we need to
get out?
Well,
I don't want to ask some questions because it might reveal part or elements of the play.
Right, we don't want to spoil a mystery.
So people are just going to have to show up at the Panetta Theater.
Yeah. We can talk about the dates again. You probably know them.
By heart.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Tomorrow night, that would be Friday night, the 19th at 7:30. Saturday night, the 20th at 7:30. Sunday, the 21st. I'm looking at the calendar. Mm-hmm. At 2:00, a matinee. And then a week from Saturday, that would be the 27th at 7:30.
The 26th is Arbor Day.
Plant a tree.
Nebraska
City, Nebraska. That's where it started.
The cast includes, of course, Eric Bond as Sherlock, Corey Rapace as Dr. Watson, Scott Gossett as Mycroft Holmes, all three of whom are here in the studio. But also we have Kate McAllister, Miriam Robinson, Michael Bigley, Andrew Sorg, Ashley Schalbreck, Scott Gossett, I mentioned him already, Shelley Johnson, Michaela Morgan, Dwight Webster, and Robert Zweifel, all in a rather large cast, I would say, for the Panada Theater.
It's quite the story to tell.
Yeah.
Do we wish them multiple broken legs?
Yes.
All the broken legs.
Everybody break one.
Yeah, everyone. Mm-hmm. And why not just do each other's? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's plain and simple. But have a great time and enjoy being on the Panada stage.
Thank you so much for having us.
Sorry about the tea. You're awfully forgiving.
Once I've had the tea and I've been able to process what just went down, and I can, I've given you both the ocular pat down. You've successfully completed it. I can go about my day.
Great. Have a good day and not too many butterflies tomorrow, and we'll see you down at the Panada tomorrow night.
Again, thanks so much.
You bet. Music break on this date in 1973, Neil Young's film, Journey Through the Past, premiered at the Dallas Film Festival. So we're going to play the title cut that was not in the soundtrack, but comes later in one of his albums called Songs for Judy. And I'll tell a backstory about that album and Judy Who. But here is Journey Through the Past from that album.